Hello, this is international football commentator Derek Ray, and you're listening to the Ranks FC podcast.
Hello Rank Squad and welcome to Champions League Takeaway here on Ranks FC. It's your favourite transatlantic football podcast. We're back in the swing of the Champions League. My name is Jack Collins and I'll be your host today. And joining me all the way from San Diego across the water is Mr. Dean Jones. How you doing, mate?
Yeah, it's been a busy day, mate. Load of football, but also baseball on now as well here in San Diego because we've got playoff season, and as we're recording this, we're losing to the Cubs in the first game. So, yeah, never thought I'd actually get to a point within a year of moving here where I actually cared about this stuff. But I'm kind of into this. Like, I've been to a lot of Padres games since I moved here. So I've been kind of, I didn't really keep an eye on it while the Champions League was going on. But since it ended, I've been catching up. So that's not ideal. But yeah, a good night of football, mate. Lots of storylines and some close storylines. Is there such thing as a close storyline? Because I feel like we had a couple that were like on the verge of being headline news and just never quite made it.
No, I take your point. Like very, very near escapes for a couple of teams is probably how we should put it. Over 30 goals in Tuesday night's Champions League action. So plenty for us to get through today. But I think we're going to start in Istanbul. Now, when I say to you, Liverpool playing in Istanbul in the Champions League, I imagine that brings back a load of happy memories, and so it should for Liverpool fans all over the world. But it wasn't so happy memories tonight. They lost 1-0 to Galatasaray in one of the loudest atmospheres I have heard in a long, long time. It was deafening in Galatasaray, and it really was one of those atmospheres. You know, there's a whole welcome to hell with Galatasaray thing that's been around for a long, long time. But obviously they've moved stadiums. This is not the same as the old one, which was a very, very small on top of your stadium. This is a much bigger ground. But it was absolutely and utterly vociferous for the entirety of it. And you know when you see a game and obviously you kind of keep an eye on what's going on. And Galler have been slowly putting together a very, very good team for quite some time now. But you kind of keep an eye on them, mostly in European football, catch a little bit of the Turkish Super League here and there. And it's one of those places you're like, wow, that atmosphere feels incredible. But the whistling started today as soon as Liverpool kicked off. And every time they had the ball for pretty much 90 minutes, it was what I can only describe as a din. It was a din from the top of the stadium to the bottom. These whistles and this loudness every time they had the ball. You know, I was watching multiple games at the same time. And I almost didn't need to look up to see who had the ball in the Galatasaray-Liverpool game, because you'd know if it was Liverpool by the sound coming through on that game. Now, it was a strange game, and obviously two losses for a week for Liverpool. It's only the second time this has happened under Arne Slot. The last time was after the PSG game, the second leg in the Champions League last season, where they obviously got knocked out of the competition, followed by that League Cup final at Wembley against Newcastle United. So that was the first one, two pretty big games in Liverpool's season last season. And it's starting to feel like a very, very big week here. Now, they concede a goal here from a penalty. Pretty sure it is a penalty. It's Szoboszlai. It's not malicious. It's clumsy. He kind of leaves a trailing arm on Yilmaz, who was absolutely sensational through this entire game down the left-hand side for Galatasaray. And it's tucked away by Victor Osimhen. Then in the second half, there's two big chances for Osimhen to make it 2-0. Alisson saves. In the second of those, he goes down injured and has to be replaced by Mamardashvili. Liverpool think they get a reprieve late on in this one because they think they've got a penalty, but it turns out that the referee hasn't seen contact by Singo, the defender, on the ball before he kicks Konate, and it gets overturned. And ultimately, Liverpool end up losing this game 1-0. Not great in that Hugo Ekitike also went off with an injury. So two losses in the space of a couple of days. And I think that the thing is that you can kind of discuss around Liverpool and this game is that Arne Slot was brave tonight. He dropped Mohamed Salah. Now, you and I were talking on Monday on our post box on Patreon And we had a couple of questions from Liverpool fans who were like, look, Salah's not having a great start to the season. We know he's brilliant, but there are plenty of options. Is it time that Slot maybe rotated a little bit? And we saw some different kind of options being given the chance to prove themselves. Jeremy Frimpong played on the right-hand side of midfield here with Dominic Szoboszlai playing at right back. That was a decision that ultimately has backfired a little bit here. Not necessarily Frimpong playing further forward, but it's the pace of Yilmaz that ends up doing Szoboszlai for the goal that ends up deciding the game for the penalty decision. And it feels like a team who at the moment are really failing to control games. I saw a few Liverpool accounts on Twitter having a discussion during this game of when was the last time that you sat and you just really enjoyed watching Liverpool play. It was just great to watch us kind of dominate. And again, like the Palace game, they dominate possession here. They create a number of chances, probably a lack of really, really good chances, I think, in terms of the way that this played out. This is a difficult period for Arne Slot, and I think that's the biggest takeaway. I think anyone is going to be able to go to Galatasaray and lose over the course of this season. They've put together an excellent side, and this is a notoriously difficult place to go. But from a Liverpool perspective, this week is just slightly starting to turn into a little bit of a nightmare one.
Yeah, he's got to grow up fast, Arne Slot. Stop blaming other people. Stop having to go at Ekitike for taking his shirt off. Stop saying, blaming people for running out the box in the final seconds of a game. Start fronting up his own tactics, I think. Like, I obviously didn't watch the entirety of this game because I was watching the Chelsea one. But from flipping between the two and what I saw and then catching up a little bit right at the end, it sounds to me that Liverpool didn't really get playing until the last 15 minutes. And I don't understand why that would be the case. Like, Liverpool need to be playing on the front foot. They need to play with pace. They need to play with invention. They need to have accuracy in what they're doing in the final third. And everything I'm seeing says they didn't have that until the final 15 minutes. Now, whether you're, I don't know why he's played Szoboszlai at right back exactly. Like, there doesn't seem, from what I can see, there doesn't seem to be a need to be playing Szoboszlai there. Is he overthinking it? I don't know. It's a brave decision to leave Salah out, probably one that he thought would be fine. Everybody's been saying Salah's not in form, leave him out. Why is he playing 90 minutes? And he has been playing, like, as I said on Patreon the other day, like, I didn't even realize, did Arne Slot know that Salah was still on the pitch in the final stages? Had he just forgotten about him? But he didn't play him here. And I've seen now people saying, why has he not started Salah? It's like, come on, we can't have it both ways here. Can't have it both ways. He's got to take some big decisions. And at some point, he's got to rotate his squad as well. So he's done that. Losing Alisson is going to be big. I don't know how bad the Ekitike was, but that was big at the weekend not to have him available in the final stages as Liverpool went in search of a goal against Crystal Palace. And they're just not having they're having dominance, but they're not having spells of extreme dominance where it's just like overwhelming. What they have had this season is a sense of inevitability until last weekend that the goal was coming. And even last weekend, you suspected that at 1-1, it still would be them that went and got the job done. But it went the other way and Nketiah got the goal and it undone them. And then today, they've had the moment again in the 90th minute. And it's gone the other way. The penalty hasn't been given. So their luck is out at the moment for Arne Slot. And what does he do? Isak's going to have to come into the starting lineup if Ekitike is out again. So he's going to get the start against Chelsea. They're going to have a different goalkeeper in there. Chelsea are going to look at this now as an opportunity to kind of hit this soft underbelly that Liverpool seem to have. Wirtz, it sounds like, was pretty anonymous again. What's happened there? Like, why is it? This was an opportunity for him. Did he play in the 10? It sounds like he played in a role that he would have preferred. So what's going on? What's going on with all of these pieces? How is he going to get the best out of them? It'd be interesting to see how calm they can stay in this moment, because there's definitely going to be a bit of a backlash on social media, but we know what Twitter fans are like. They're emotional either way, right? And they're always looking. People are always looking online to cause a fuss, and they like that. But what's
always
the truth?
Too high and always too low, almost, right?
Yeah, exactly. So, how do Liverpool as a club now react to these two defeats that are very much unexpected? Like, when you consider the games that they've had this season, when you consider that they've, you know, there's that Newcastle game when they were behind and pull it out the bag late on, and when they've had the Liverpool game and when they've had the Atletico Madrid game and the games that you would have gone through and been like, okay, these are the games that look like banana skins, but they've actually slipped up at Selhurst Park and at Galatasaray. And you think, well, okay, how do they now deal with Stamford Bridge and a home fixture to Man United? Interesting.
Yeah, I mean, look, I think for me, the element that Liverpool just really lacking is control. If you rewind a year, right, and you listen to what we were saying about the start of the Arne Slot era at Liverpool, we talked about this incredible ability that they had and that Arne Slot seemed to have to take the kind of best bits of the Klopp era, that ability to turn it up to 11, and then also kind of at times walk that back and be like, okay, Liverpool are 1-0 up. They're able to just knock the ball around and it's able to be controlled and everything about them seems like they have games in the palm of their hand. I think this season, we've seen very little of that from a Liverpool perspective. Now, they had to change and they had to adapt, right? They had to continue to try to move forward. And change takes time and sometimes it's difficult. And this isn't to say that come December, come January, this Liverpool side haven't completely clicked and everything looks unbelievable and they're blowing teams away left, right and centre. I think that's plausible still. I'm not suggesting that it isn't. But I think that what they have lost this year is that ability to control games for long spells. Now, they started well here. And what I thought was interesting was, you know, you said right at the top of that, that Liverpool are lacking a little bit like that pace and that injection and that ability to play. I still see that when I'm watching them. I still see that Liverpool are most dangerous in those areas where they're moving the ball quickly. And at the start of this game, it was incredibly end-to-end, right? We talked about the start of the Arsenal-Newcastle game at the weekend and the fact that it swung kind of wildly in both directions. And it kind of feels to me like every game that Liverpool play at the moment feels a bit like that, that all of these games don't have the same kind of control that we saw at the start of the Arne Slot era. And part of that is obviously that they're experimenting with new positions and the three in midfield have changed from last time. Szoboszlai playing at right back is obviously an element of that, which is asking him to come inside and play that kind of Trent role, if you will, where he's adding to the extra midfielder and allowing them to have the extra man in possession and trying to kind of control and calm things down there. But it's not working in the same way. And without him in the middle doing that kind of incredible shuttle run business that he does, they just don't seem to have the same ability to put a game in their own hands and kind of control it from the base. They got a bit. And look, in some ways, towards the end of this, Liverpool get a bit unlucky because they had all the momentum right into the 90th minute. And then the VAR check happens for the penalty and they lose all that momentum where they were building it and building it and building it. And that's been a hallmark of what we've seen from Liverpool this season. So that should be taken into account. But I do think that in these games where they're really transitional, there's mistakes being made, there doesn't feel like there's the cover for people. And look, Osimhen probably should have scored again tonight from one of the two opportunities that he had. And so if you're kind of looking at it from that perspective, are Liverpool currently just a little bit too heavy metal? Are they a little bit too emotional in the way that they're playing? And that whole heart on the sleeve thing that's ended up with them winning games late throughout the Premier League, which is to be admired, is also potentially just setting them back a little bit in terms of the fact that they don't seem to be able to get the same kind of pause and calm in games that they had last year, which was such an important factor in why they went on that incredible streak through the first half of the season.
Yeah, we'll soon find out, you know, was it a cover up in the early stages of the season or were they, did they really have a dominance that's just underlying in the sense that they just have a superpower because they're Premier League champions? Because it did feel like it, didn't it? It felt like they just have a sense of authority over the rest of the league. And they should still feel that. Like, they are still the champions and they do still have the best squad in the Premier League to call upon. And they still haven't fully unleashed their new signing, Alex Isak, on the league. He's played a bit more than would have been anticipated. But yeah, it's mainly because of Ekitike. But now he's going to get more minutes and he should be more up to speed. And it's time to get him in it, get Salah back to top form. And that's when you start to see what we can actually get out of Liverpool. So a very interesting test for Arne Slot.
Yeah, 100%. Just a word for Galatasaray, because I feel like we talked a lot about Liverpool there. I thought they were excellent tonight. And they went through and played the game that they wanted to play. There was a lot of nicking the ball in dangerous areas. They created down the left and they looked to exploit Liverpool in that channel where perhaps they do look a little bit weaker as well. Some really, really talented footballers in this Galatasaray team. And as I say, Yilmaz, I thought, was just sensational down that left-hand side, you know, 25 years old now, and someone who's kind of really coming into the prime of their career. He's been at this Galatasaray side for quite some time, but it feels like they're relying on him more and more, and the combinations that he has there up top with Victor Osimhen, just really impressive. They're going to be a bit of a nightmare, I think, especially at home. I know they lost their first game to Eintracht Frankfurt pretty comfortably, but again, it was an end-to-end encounter that had chances at both ends, and I think that they're going to be a lot of fun throughout the course of this period. So I just wanted to give a shout out to them because they managed this game really, really well today. With that, I want to come on to Liverpool's opponents at the weekend, who are Chelsea. Now, they had the return of Jose Mourinho at Stamford Bridge, coming back with just, I think, his fourth game in charge of this Benfica side. And they got the win, Chelsea, but it wasn't the most comfortable night at the office at Stamford Bridge. That maybe doesn't matter in the grander scheme of things.
Yeah, Jose began the evening blowing kisses to the Chelsea fans and showing his love for the club. By the end, he had a yellow card and he'd gone straight down the tunnel. So it's Chelsea 1, Benfica 0. And Jose doesn't get to rattle his old club in the way that he perhaps would have planned. And it's a relief to Enzo Maresca, who's been coming under some pressure in recent days. And I think that this is a very important win for him, and an important mindset actually that Chelsea showed in this game. Like, no, it wasn't comfortable. It definitely wasn't comfortable. But the manner of this win is actually important. We should probably set out with saying they've got to stop getting red cards. They've got another red card tonight. João Pedro has been sent off for a second yellow for a high foot. He'd come on with like half hour of the game left. He's got sent off in added time. So that's Sanchez, Chalobah, and João Pedro all sent off in successive games now. I know this one hasn't had a major impact on this particular game, but it's just got to stop. Like, you can't get through with this. Ultimately, my big concern is the same as the one that Maresca had coming into the season about their goalkeeper and their defence. And there was a wobble. There were definitely wobbles, actually, throughout this game, particularly in the early stages. There was some bad communication between Badiashile and Sanchez. Chelsea looked vulnerable. When Benfica pressed them, they looked vulnerable. Benfica often would let Chelsea have the ball for spells and then ramp up the pressure in small periods and moments. But Jose's tactics seemed to be going pretty well, to be honest with you. And then in the 18th minute, Chelsea kind of show some initiative and they produce a moment of positivity, which up to that moment had been few and far between. Garnacho, on his full debut for Chelsea, shows a burst of what he should be doing, sticks the ball across goal, and Rios sticks it into his own net. It's an own goal. It proves to be the only goal of the game. Chelsea didn't find enough moments like that. They didn't test Benfica in the ways that they could have, given all of the assets of their own that they've got that could have tested them, particularly down the flanks. Benfica, they had some periods of play when I think they would have felt disappointed they couldn't have made more of their opportunities. Like I say, like when they did press, they were very good at it. But Chelsea actually became more comfortable as the game grew on. I think Cucurella ended up getting the official man of the match. Badiashile got a long outing, which was good for Chelsea. Obviously, like, he's still working his way back, and his return to the side is one of the reasons they didn't go and sign another centre-back in the transfer window. He got through 80 minutes here. And actually, it was okay by the end. As you know, anyone that listens to the Patreon in particular will know, like, I am completely unconvinced that Chelsea can get through this season without signing a goalkeeper and a centre-back. Like, I don't see them competing for any trophies if they don't address that. But Badiashile, obviously, like, is supposed to be a very important player in this squad. And he's working his way back. And this wasn't too bad in the end from him. Malo Gusto, I think, probably still gives Chelsea fans a few heart attacks. And Chalobah wasn't perhaps at his best here. There was a shout for a penalty that Benfica had when Mourinho wasn't happy. It wasn't given. I think it would have been harsh against Enzo Fernandez to have given it. Antonio Silva denies Enzo Fernandez the chance to put Chelsea 2-0 up with absolutely brilliant, like, saving header at the far post, which would have made it 2-0. Fernandes is just waiting to nod it in, but he puts his life on the line almost, and he ends up injured, lying on the floor, Antonio Silva. But a brilliant defender, as we all know, somebody that Chelsea have actually had their eye on in recent times. And that was good. Jamie Gittins flatters to deceive again. Like, I'm really disappointed.
He's blind so much for someone who's like clearly so talented. Like, it's really frustrating to watch him at times because he'll create the separation, right? Like, he'll step away from his man, and then you'll realize the ball's just been left behind him. It's really bizarre to watch.
Yeah, I mean, the two main moments, there was one when he, I don't know how many step-overs he did, 4 or 5. And then the final one was one too many, and his kind of studs clutch the bottom of the ball and it drifts away from him. And then the second one, he has a chance, I think it's to play João Pedro in with a pretty simple ball. And his weight of pass is just completely wrong, completely wrong. And it's like, these are basic moments in the game. And I don't know, maybe he's overthinking it. Maybe he's trying too hard to make an impact. Whatever it is, Jamie Gittins is struggling to make his mark on Chelsea at the moment. Benfica fans really, really believed in the plan that Jose Mourinho had for them here. And up to the 90th minute, they were giving it everything behind the goal. And I think that they felt, even in those last stages, particularly with Badiashile and then off, that they might get an opportunity. Achiampong had come on for Chelsea, and you know, there was obviously, again, a sense of potential vulnerability there, given his inexperience on this sort of stage. But that final chance that a Jose team back in the day would have got just never came. And as I say, Mourinho just disappeared down the tunnel without the chance to make any further statements to his own old Chelsea fans or even his new fans. And the game was done. A big relief for Enzo Maresca. I don't believe that the pressure is properly on him, as I've again said on Patreon. I think that he has his own concerns about the squad, and I think that they need to find some harmony behind the scenes at Chelsea at the moment. But all round, this is a good night because they've seen that other teams, like Liverpool, have fallen in the Champions League at this moment. And they haven't done that. They've managed to keep their feet, they've managed to keep their focus, and they've got a win. And now Chelsea can go into that fixture with Liverpool at home at the weekend and think, okay, maybe we've got a platform here.
Yeah, 100%. Also, you know, bear in mind, Chelsea lost the opener to Bayern, which is completely fair enough in Munich. It's about getting points on the board, right, at this point. And this had the potential to be a banana skin, not just with Benfica being, you know, a well-put-together unit. I know they lost to Carabag on the opening day and they looked all over the place. That cost Bruno Lage his job. But Jose Mourinho as well, and the emotion associated with that, the fact that there are players out, Buonanotte playing in Cole Palmer's place, really, Tyrique George leading the line instead of João Pedro. There were question marks over whether this Chelsea would be able to get themselves over the line. I thought the Pedro Neto was excellent tonight. Like, very, very, very impressive. And Moise Caicedo absolutely everywhere, as he so often is for this Chelsea team. There were good performers. You know, you go Neto, Caicedo, Cucurella, and you're almost playing, you know, noughts and crosses in some ways. You cross it across the board and you're like, right, there's enough there from the three of them to have got this over the line. Benfica, you know, didn't take their chances 100%. But it's a big win for Chelsea from that perspective as well. So I think that was important and a big step forward. And one that Enzo Maresca will be very grateful for, I think, when he walks out of Stamford Bridge later on tonight. Right, we're going to take a little break there. When we come back afterwards, we'll be talking about the two Madrid sides who both picked up manitas tonight. Welcome back to Champions League Takeaway here on Ranks FC. We're working our way through Tuesday's Champions League action. And I want to take us to Madrid, Dean. A big win for Atletico in the derby at the weekend. And now another big win for them on the second day of the Champions League. A 5-1 win over Eintracht Frankfurt. A funny old day in some ways for Atleti, because it did feel like this one was quite end-to-end and quite fraught at times. But they've scored 5 twice in a row now at the Metropolitano. And it feels like everyone is very, very excited. You know, 2 5-goal wins in the space of 4 days. And I suppose the question is, have they finally arrived this season? This was really, really impressive. Now, obviously, you look at what Atleti did, not just this summer, but the summer before as well. And there was this sense that they were suddenly starting to get into the big leagues of spending to try and kind of, one, close the gap to the big two, if you will, in Spain. But also that, you know, finally, there was going to be this sense that Atleti were there from a kind of economic perspective to make up that gap and fundamentally put themselves in that conversation. Now, at Christmas last season, there was talk of Atleti being in the title race, talk that we did on this podcast that we discussed. And I thought they were in a really good position, and it all fell apart in a kind of 9-day spell over January and February. And it ended up being a little bit underwhelming, I suppose, Atletico Madrid's season. Now, at the start of this season, there is another big spend and this kind of feeling that maybe it's time for them to kind of close that gap again. And the start of the season is incredibly underwhelming. They lose that first game to Espanyol, and then they drop points to a bunch of teams that were considered relegation contenders. They were said to have the easiest start to the season that anyone had. And yet it's this kind of comeback win over Rayo Vallecano and then a huge, huge win over Real Madrid in the derby. And they back this up in the Champions League by dropping 5 against Eintracht Frankfurt, who are a little bit all over the place, but are very, very good side.
They're a good team. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, it's 2 good teams they've beaten.
100%. And you kind of come to this and you're looking at it and thinking, what's changed? How have Atleti kind of finally worked this out from their own perspective? And it feels like to me that the balance feels right for the first time this season. Now, it's a 4-4-2 on paper. It's not necessarily a 4-4-2 in actual action and practice. But what I do think that's started to happen here is the balance from the back line and the way that the front four are going forward suddenly feels like there's players behind them. Ruggeri's playing very, very well now at left back, and is someone who, you know, we've seen tuck in and play in a back three at times before, but also tuck into midfield. So he's comfortable on the ball, but also just sitting back and doing the defensive work. Robin Lenormand finally feels like he's arrived. There was flashes of it last season, but he scored 2 in 2 games. That's not why it feels like he's arrived. I think it's because suddenly it feels like this defense has some settle in front of it as well. Marcus Llorente on one side, kind of streaming forward, gives Gio Simeone the chance to come inside. Griezmann dropping off. Alvarez and him finding that synergy again. It was Sorloth at the weekend. Raspadori played on the left-hand side of the midfield here. He's someone who very much was a forward in that Napoli side, but kind of doing a different job here. I think the key, Dean, is Pablo Barrios in the midfield, who suddenly feels like he's exploded into the player we were hoping he could be. He's been kind of around and about for a couple of seasons now, and there was always a fair bit of excitement around him, but he finally feels like he's coming into his own as this all-action midfielder. Now, he's partnered with Conor Gallagher in this one, who had a very, very good game as well here, I thought, but it kind of doesn't matter. He was partnered with Koke in the game against Real Madrid, who needed to come back in to give them a little bit of kind of conducting and just kind of set the tempo in the middle of the team. And yet you're looking at it and thinking, wow, you know, who's the player who's anchoring this entire situation? And for me, that's Barrios. That's what he's doing. He's putting it all together. Now, it helps, I suppose, if you have Julian Alvarez in front of him, fresh from scoring a hat-trick against Rayo and then scoring 2 wonderful goals against Real Madrid at the weekend. He scores a goal here. He grabs 2 assists, 5 key passes, 9.
Right. It makes me laugh. People keep saying, is he going to come back to the Premier League? No, I don't think he is, mate. I don't think he is.
He's just an absolutely outrageous footballer.
Why they let him leave? Yeah.
Unplayable again here. And look, you can have your discussions about who the best number 9 in the world is all you like, right? I mean, for me, the best striker in the world is Erling Haaland because he scores goals so often and so regularly that it makes it feel kind of ridiculous. But in terms of like a complete number 9, someone who can kind of do a bit of everything, someone who has all of the strings to their bow, behind Harry Kane, I think you'd look at Julian Alvarez as someone who's just able to kind of drop in at times, to create at times, to score goals at times, to do it from dead balls, to do it from set pieces, to do it, you know, in such a variety of fashions. And I think that right now, you know, bear in mind, he was substituted a couple of weeks ago and the camera cut to him and he was basically muttering to himself, why do I always get subbed off? Yeah. And then suddenly he's there and they're talking about him as this player and Simeone's kind of there like, yeah, we need him to stay at the club for as long as we possibly can keep him. He, you know, he could be the best player in the world if we keep him here. And to be honest, whilst I think that there is obviously an element of hyperbole attached to that, you can see why those kind of statements are being made. He is just
I mean, you've only got to look at as well the way in which he left Man City. Like, that was a big shock to a lot of people that they were able to even get him out of there, because of that discontent, right? It's because, like, he feels like he's the star of the show and he should be the star of the show. And so Atleti were lucky to be able to get him in that moment. And they were lucky that City hadn't given him the status that he probably deserves, because they already have a superstar striker that's one notch up from him. And you've got to keep this guy happy. You've got to.
Yeah. I mean, like, it's as simple as that. When he's playing and he's in this kind of form, there are a few players on the planet that can do what he do. What was lovely here as well was the fact that Antoine Griezmann ended up scoring, you know, his 200th goal for the club, which was such a nice moment. And, you know, you get to those kind of, you know, happy times where he's holding up that shirt which says Grizzy 200 on it, 200 goals in all competitions for Atletico Madrid. What servant to the club he has been. And despite the fact that there was the kind of wobble in the middle, him coming back and making that impact was really quite special at the same time. But this was complete and utter dominance. You know, you look at this and you're saying, okay, this is an Eintracht side who maybe don't need the ball as much as other teams do. But you look at what Atleti managed to create here. There are two goals disallowed in this game. So it could have been seven. One of them was for handball. And look, both of them were reasonably disallowed as far as I'm concerned. But actually, the way that they played, the aggression, the desire to win the ball back high up to make things happen, and the way that the four forwards poured into this Eintracht side and into this Eintracht half time and time and time again and absolutely overwhelmed them in terms of the way that they were opening up chances, I think is a great sign for Atleti going forward.
Yeah, exactly that. You know, that... It does feel like the Real Madrid games surely just opened the gates for them to realise what's possible for them. And I think Real Madrid will almost have a sense of dread about looking at this result even, thinking, what have we just done? What have we just done since the second half of that game? What have we done? Because we've just built their confidence to a level that could become quite scary, because, you know, the league is going to be close anyway. Madrid have been good this season, but not to a level that they're going to be, you know, inevitable go on and win the league. And Atleti here have now got 10 goals in two games, and one of them's against their arch rival, one's against a Frankfurt team that legitimately are a good team. Like I said, we said at the top of that, like, this is a good Bundesliga team, and they've preyed on their vulnerabilities. So, this is very interesting, mate. This could be a turning moment.
Yeah, I mean, look, the last point on Atleti I'd probably make here is the fact that they managed to only concede one here to an Eintracht side who have scored 28 goals in 8 games so far. Yeah. Now, they've conceded 19, so, like, scoring loads of goals is not necessarily the same impressive. But in the last three, Eintracht has scored 5, 3, and 6, right? And Atleti have held them to one here. It's a good goal from Jonathan Pekarek. But generally, that bit of it as well, it's not just going out and scoring a heap of goals that will please Simeone. It's also being able to keep a very, very good attacking unit at bay. And it all looks kind of rosy from an Atleti perspective right now. So one to keep an eye on, but very much a very, very good week from a Colchoneros perspective. Let's flip to the other side of it, because it was a good night for Real Madrid as well.
Yeah, it was. I mean, as you would expect. I mean, if this wasn't a good night for Real Madrid, then we'd have had major problems on our hands, because they're playing a team that nobody's heard of. And quite frankly, probably wouldn't even get out of the second division in Spain. But ultimately, on the back of a big defeat to Atletico Madrid, they've then got to make an 11-hour flight to the border of China. Like, this isn't easy, right? This is not an easy thing to have to do. It's kind of a crazy thing, to be honest, to have to do for a Champions League fixture, but it is what it is, and you have to look at it as a potential banana skin. And it took them a little while to kind of find their groove. Their opening goal didn't come until the 25th minute, and I have to admit, I felt really sorry for the Almaty goalkeeper. Like, it was such an unfortunate moment. And, like, he's come racing out of his goal. I think it's Mastantuono, like, just gets a toe to the ball. And the keeper just, like, he does, nick him on the head with his boot or his knee, and he goes to the ground, and like you can see the defenders, like as he goes to ground, you're like, ah, it's done, it's a penalty, it's an absolute nailed on pen. And as soon as Mbappe is standing there waiting to take a pen, the only question, you're not wondering like, is this a goal or not? You're wondering, is it a Panenka or not? That's all I was wondering. I was like, what's he going to do? Is he just going to make sure, or is he going to Panenka? And I was like, do you know what? I think I would just stand there. For this one, I think I would just stand there and make sure that that's not how he's scoring. But neither of those things happened. It went in one corner. He dived the other way. And basically, that's the way that the game went. The two teams went in total different directions from that point onwards. Mbappe went on to score a hat-trick. Two goals coming in the second half, and then Camavinga and Brahim Diaz were able to wrap it up later on in the game, and Madrid were actually able to go on and actually enjoy the game, I guess, which is what they really needed to do on the back of that defeat at the weekend. This means that they got 2 from 2 in the Champions League. So they beat Marseille first time out. Interestingly, Vinicius Junior getting mixed reviews, actually, captaining the team, but also people concerned about Vinny's performance here. And one of the storylines of the season really is the inconsistencies of him. One of the things that you see with him, even in a game like this, it was so easy, right, to get past his man. It was so easy. He was like, it's toy with him for a second, they just knock it past and he was gone. But his end product wasn't great. And I think it's because he didn't have to work that hard for it. And one of the, a lot of the comments that I've seen both at the time and since the game ended have been like, can we please just see some consistencies both in game and game to game from Vinny so that we know we're getting him back? Because we don't know exactly what we're getting from him. And a couple of people were talking about him like he's Rafael Leao, like he's getting towards that stage. Whereas like there's still that genius in there. It's going to happen from time to time. But it used to be pretty regular with Vinny, particularly through spells in a season. And I think there's some concern that that version isn't there anymore. And it has to be, doesn't it? It can't be gone. Not yet.
Well, you'd hope not.
You'd hope not. And like, he wants that status that Mbappe's got. He wants that contract that Mbappe's got. So he's got to earn it at this point.
Yeah, I mean, look, Kylian Mbappe's start to the season has been absolutely red hot, right? So there's a sense there that not only is he loving that kind of number nine role now, which we were all, you know, a bit confused or a bit concerned about how he was going to adapt to.
Oh, mate, he's great.
No, 100%. But, you know, that one in itself should open up the space for Vinicius Jr. to be able to
make
havoc on that left-hand side. It feels like Xavi Alonso has solved that problem of Kylian Mbappe drifting into those spaces. He's very much in the center of the park. He's very much roaming now, you know, right to left, but he's no longer naturally dropping off into that left-hand channel, which might have ended up with them kind of colliding with each other at times. And that should have opened the door for Vinicius Jr. to kind of pick up the spaces and take advantage of it, but it hasn't quite worked so far. I did think it was interesting that Arda Güler came back into the middle here. And look, obviously, Kairat are not the same side that Atleti are, right? So you have to kind of take everything with a pinch of salt. But, you know, at the weekend, I did think that they missed Güler's ability to pick up the ball in the center of the park and make things happen. I know he picked up, obviously, a goal and an assist. I'm not suggesting he played badly on that right-hand side, but just someone to be able to pull the strings a little bit in there. And with Bellingham not looking, you know, completely back to full fitness, I thought the Real Madrid really did miss Güler in the middle. He comes back into the middle here and suddenly they whack 5. And again, you know, opponents taken into consideration, but just something to be aware of. I do think that he's really enjoying that role as the kind of most aggressive midfielder of a number of the three, and actually seeing him in there and seeing the difference between what it looked like at the weekend and here, just something to bear in mind is probably what I would say about it. But
yeah,
he looks incredible in that central role this season, and it's going to be a puzzle. A good puzzle, but a puzzle for Xabi Alonso to work out how he can get the best out of everyone in the same kind of elements, because there's a lot of talented players that want to play in the same positions.
Well, yeah, and obviously, like one of the narratives from the Atleti game, obviously the other day was around his lineup, and you know, quite a lot of surprise about Bellingham coming into the starting lineup when they played against Atleti. Obviously, like today, he's moved the lineup around again. And like you say, you've now got Arda Güler going more central. Bellingham doesn't play in this one, comes off the bench for the last 10 minutes. So there's a lot of balance he's got to find here, because he's got to give players like Arda Güler confidence. Obviously, this is a good time to do that. But then similarly, you put Bellingham into the frame for a big match like that one, it didn't work out and people were criticising it. So like, these are the sort of learning moments that the Xavi Alonso's got to come. Like, and this is what it is like when you're managing as big a club as you could ever manage.
Yeah, 100%, 100%. I mean, look, for like a bit like Chelsea earlier, Real Madrid needed to win this game and just sort of get it done with. There was travel restrictions in this one. We talked about, you know, the different emotional responses earlier at the bridge, but there are things that will always play into it. It's just about getting the job done.
Yeah. And like later on this month, they've got Juve in the Champions League and they've got Barcelona in La Liga. And those are the two games that ultimately matter, because they are statement fixtures where you really judge yourselves.
100%, 100%. Right, we're going to take another break there. When we come back, we're going to be talking about Tottenham Hotspur's visit to the Arctic Circle and rounding up all of the rest of the Champions League action as well. Stick with us. Welcome back to Champions League Takeaway for the third and final time tonight here on Ranks FC. Jack Collins and Dean Jones with you. And it's time to go up to Norway to discuss a Tottenham side who went to play Bodø Glimt. Now, Bodø Glimt proved Spurs' opponents in the latter stages of the Europa League last season. They came through that one unscathed, is probably the phrase that I would use to describe it. It wasn't quite the same tonight, Dean. A 2-2 draw for Spurs away at Bodø Glimt. And to be honest, felt like they kind of nicked this one. They have nicked a point here. Now,
it sounded like it, mate. It sounded like it.
Before we go any further, perfectly reasonable start for Spurs in the Champions League. Back in the Champions League, a win at home, an albeit unconvincing win, but a win at home to Villarreal. And then a point away at Bodø Glimt. If you'd offered 4 points from those two games, I think most Spurs fans would have said, yeah, all right. I don't think they would have bitten your hand off for it. I think they would have seen them as two games that were winnable. But equally, I think they would have said, yeah, 4 points is a pretty decent return from those games. So, you know, all in all, it's worth kind of pointing out that it's probably not the end of the world. But this wasn't great from a Spurs perspective whatsoever. They had to fight back from 2-0 down. Now, on the positive side, this is the third time in a row that we've seen Spurs battle back from a difficult position, right? We saw them battle back from 2-0 down against Brighton. We saw them find a late equaliser against Wolves at the weekend. And they've battled back from 2-0 down here as well in the Champions League to grab a 2-2 draw at what is a very difficult place to go. Now, not because Bodø Glimt are the best side in the world, although I would suggest that they are an incredibly well-drilled one. And Kjetil Knudsen has done an incredible job with this team to take them to European regulars and, you know, regular scalp takers as well is something I would add to their bow at this point. But there are certain caveats here. You know, it's an artificial pitch. It's obviously in the Arctic Circle. So it's already starting to get to kind of very, very cold. And also their opponents have had 9 days off before this game. So they come into it far, far fresher than Spurs did. But equally, you would expect, you know, the quality on show to tell a little bit. And look, Thomas Frank has faced a little bit of criticism probably for the first time in his Spurs tenure over the last couple of games with the way that they've gone about their business, with the lack of creativity in midfield. And that wasn't hugely addressed here. He went for a midfield three of Pape Matar, Rodrigo Bentancur and Lucas Bergvall. Now, things did get better later on. Xavi Simons came in and played in the number 10 role, which I thought was important. Joao Palhinha came on and had a telling impact as well in this one. And Archie Gray ends up forcing the equaliser from a midfield position, which I think is probably an important thing to note, that Archie Gray is probably going to play further forward and a little bit more in midfield. He's had a couple of very, very good cameos now in a couple of games. And I think people are starting to call for his inclusion on a more regular basis. But the first half of this game, Spurs should have been 1, maybe 2-0 down. Bodø Glimt missed a penalty and then an absolute sitter as well in the first half. And then an old friend of this podcast, Dean, came to the fore, Jens Petter Haga. Now, we have a podcast on this network now called The Truth, but you'll remember some years back as Jens Petter Haga was coming through that his nickname on this podcast was The Truth. And he showed it a little bit tonight. Some unbelievable footwork, especially for the second goal here. And it was a delight to see him playing, you know, with this smile on his face again. He really did feel like one of those players who had such a high ceiling, and it never quite worked for him. You know, a number of clubs, it was, he went to Milan, that didn't work hugely. He went to Eintracht Frankfurt. There were spells and flashes, but it did feel like there was more to see from Jens Petter Haga, but we're starting to see more of the best of him. Still only 25 years old, we should probably add. But he was absolutely exceptional tonight in this game. And you know, so much of what Bodø/Glimt did well came through him. They had some great combinations in the final third. They put together some really lovely sequences of play. And you know, some of the old guard who've been there for a while now, someone like a Patrick Berg, who you know has been kind of the heart of the midfield for quite some time, still feel like they're playing at a really, really incredibly high level. A lot of players, you know, leave Bodø and end up going back there because it's the place that they've played their best football. And Knutsen has put together this incredible team. An incredible kind of sense that they're moving in the same direction, they're moving in the right direction as well. And Spurs had no real answers for it for the first sort of hour of this game. Now, they forced their way back into it, you know, after the second goal goes in with a header from Mickey van der Ven from a deep cross from the side. And it's a really, really good header. And it kind of inspires Spurs a little bit. But even then, it felt like all the momentum was with Bodø/Glimt. And it ends up with the second goal that comes in just in the last minute. Richarlison basically forces an own goal after the ball comes back out after Archie Gray has had a shot, and the unfortunate Gundogan ends up sticking it into the back of his own net. But I do think, you know, I was watching kind of Thomas Frank's face after the end of this game, and he was chatting to a couple of the Bodø/Glimt players and kind of been almost apologetic for the fact that they've come out of this game with a 2-2 draw. And, you know, that really was the sense of it, that the Spurs fans who have travelled will obviously have enjoyed the late equaliser, and Spurs fans in general will be pleased that they've come out of a difficult place to go with a point. But the performance was more worrying than perhaps positive in many ways.
Yeah, obviously, just following this one, I couldn't believe what I was seeing. They go behind Tottenham, and then it seems like they've scored, and there's like a VAR check on it. The goal doesn't count. You're like, oh my goodness, like this is sounding Spursy. This is not something that Thomas Frank needs. So when you see that they've kind of got out of there alive, that is extremely important. Like for the mindset, for morale, for belief that this team are not Spursy anymore, in the sense that they're going to actually go and lose a game like this. Like that is crucial. Yes, they should still really be going to Bodø/Glimt and winning, but like it doesn't work like that. Football doesn't always work like that. And it's some, you know, Bodø/Glimt have got experience of games like this. They've pushed themselves. They've raised the bar of what they are now capable of. And what it means is that when they now are faced up to teams like Tottenham, who have, yes, a superior status to them in European football branding and heritage, they're not scared of them. And they've got a togetherness and a belief and a game plan that they believe can work and can definitely work. They were very close to it, obviously paying off here and only let down in the dying stages. So yeah, Tottenham have got themselves out of trouble a little bit, but it means a lot to them. And as we talk about, you know, teams having these last-ditch moments, and Liverpool, it was going against them, and you know the moments from the last two games going against them in terms of a goal and a penalty. Well, obviously Tottenham, they've got themselves out of jail against Wolves at the weekend. They've got out of jail here with a late goal as well. And they're both games that just salvage a draw, but they're moments that also will be looked back upon and be like, oh, Tottenham are on a really good unbeaten run, and they haven't lost a game since they played Bournemouth at the end of August. And suddenly, if that can drag on and they go to Leeds and they play Aston Villa, it starts to look very promising for Thomas Frank, and you forget the fact that they were on the verge of a defeat, which would have been looked at as close to being a crisis. So, yeah, important moments.
Yeah, 100%. I mean, and look, there are still issues. And one of the things that Bodø/Glimt did really well today was I thought they worked the centre of the pitch in a way that Spurs just didn't. They just felt like they had to funnel everything down both sides. And there was no ability to kind of turn a man and make things happen in the middle of the park. And it's starting to become a relatively regular criticism, I think, you know, in the last couple of games of Spurs under Thomas Frank, that they don't want to work the ball through the centre of the pitch, which is, you know, obviously a real route to goal. But also, if you're not doing it, people know that they can, one, funnel you out wide, and two, double mark down those areas because there's nothing coming through the middle. And that's going to have to change, you know, if Spurs are going to want to kind of turn these points into wins. equally, you know, you said the word Spursy. It is worth kind of pointing out that, you know, in the last couple of games, Spurs have dug in deep and they've got themselves out of trouble three times in a row. That's something that we didn't see as much last season. It's something that we haven't seen from Spurs, you know, since those kind of early days under Ange Postecoglou with those kind of late winners. Was it Sheffield United or Leicester, where they managed to score a couple of goals in quick succession to turn games around? It's a kind of trait worth having, and it should be applauded at the same time that you can equally be critical of their performance over the first 60, 70 minutes of this game.
Yeah, exactly that. So it's all about changing your identity, and also, you know, the manager, he's still adapting to new things himself, Thomas Frank. You know, this is all a learning process of taking the step up to a bigger club and playing on different stages on a tighter schedule, quick turnarounds. And I can't even imagine how much is going on in his brain on a weekly basis at the moment, trying to pick his teams in advance, trying to think about who he wants to rest, who the medics are telling him he's got to rest, all that sort of stuff that we don't have to think about as fans that are racing through his mind at all times. He must have pieces of paper all over his offices with all his different lineups jotted on them. All his whiteboards are full of notes as he's like, right, okay, I've got Wolves. Who am I going to play there? Bodo Glimt next. Then I've got it's so much going on for him that he just hasn't had to deal with before. And at the end of the day, like I say, he's coming out of it with an unbeaten spell under his belt. So not ideal results-wise, but the team's still alive in terms of what they're trying to build to.
Yeah, 100%. 100%. A good result in the end for Thomas Frank and Tottenham Hotspur. Right, let's wrap it up, shall we? Let's talk through the other four games quickly that happened tonight. And Marseille 4, Ajax 0, Dean, was a big one. And look, Marseille's performance at Real Madrid appears to have kind of sparked their season into life a little bit. You know, this is a team who've had a very up and down start to the season. But in recent weeks, you know, we've seen them really start to kind of turn the screw a little bit. The win over PSG in the Classique. They won against Strasbourg at the weekend, which was a really important result as well in terms of pushing and kind of keeping it running in Ligue 1. And then an absolute demolition job on Ajax here. Igor Paixão scoring the first two, and he grabbed an assist, his first in both for the club. He took his opportunity tonight, and this is a pretty stacked attack. He came in, you know, to relatively big fanfare in the summer, obviously getting to play against former opponents here, having come in from Feyenoord in the Eredivisie, but he was absolutely brilliant, tore Ajax apart, I thought, in the first half. And look, Ajax looked dreadful in this one, like absolutely abysmal. They could not deal with this Marseille press whatsoever. But it is worth pointing out that it feels like De Zerbi has started to get the press right. It feels like this Marseille team is starting to look again like a team built in his image. And they're forcing errors and taking advantage of them. The fourth goal in particular from Pierre-Emerick Aubameyang is from a turnover deep in Marseille's half. And, you know, about five passes later, the ball's in the back of the net. Brilliant finish from Pierre-Emerick Aubameyang. But it did just feel like Marseille are kind of forcing themselves and forcing their style of play onto other teams, which is something that they've struggled with, I think, in kind of regularity over the last little while. And a couple of weeks back, you know, after that win over PSG, De Zerbi came out and was like, yeah, it's great to win this game, but it doesn't mean anything if we don't follow it up with a couple of wins. And I thought there was a pretty kind of pointed comment of, okay, this team can get themselves up for big moments, but can they carry on and can they push that into consistency? Well, those words seem to have taken hold a little bit here. And I think that this Marseille team is looking more and more like a De Zerbi team with every game that we see from them. This was really, really impressive at the Velodrome. And Ajax completely and utterly blitzed by De Zerbi's team and the way that they played on the front foot for pretty much the entire game. Took the lead early, doubled it early, and then just kind of ran riot over the course of it. So yeah, a big shout out to Marseille, who looked excellent. Bayern Munich won 5-1 against Paphos. Now, I was falling over myself last week to praise Paphos' rearguard effort after their draw with Olympiacos, but they were shredded here by Bayern Munich. And what I think is interesting about Bayern, and look, you can kind of take this game again, a bit like we talked about with Kairat, you know, pinch of salt with scoring a load of goals, but they look almost effortless in their dismantling of sides this season, Bayern. They're so strong from an attacking perspective, and it doesn't look like they're having to work incredibly hard to break down teams, not just here, but in the Bundesliga as well. Harry Kane smashing records. Saw a brilliant headline this week about how a marriage of convenience had become a true love between Bayern Munich and Harry Kane. And I thought it was a lovely kind of sentiment to, you know, he has become the complete and utter centerpiece.
Do you think he'll stay beyond this season?
Yeah, I do. I don't see why he would leave this team.
I do, because I think he'll be like, right, what next? But he hasn't got a lot of time left, right? He's done this. He's cracked it. Why I don't personally think he'll stay, because I think he'll be... Imagine if the door does open for him to go to Barcelona. Imagine that door is there. I think that's a great opportunity. Tottenham, I don't know. I don't know like whether he really needs to go and get the Premier League goals record. Like, cause I still feel like he might be able to do that at 36. Like, I don't feel that like right now he needs to do that. But if Lewandowski is going and Kane does get the chance to go at Barca... something like that, I think he needs to go for.
Yeah, that I could see. Yeah, that I can understand a whole lot more. That I could appreciate, because I think that he actually does really want a Champions League to add to the thing. And my kind of argument was going to be, you know, is he going to get a better chance or go somewhere where he has a better chance of winning a Champions League than at Bayern? And obviously, if he was going to return to the Premier League, I think the answer is probably no.
Yeah.
In that respect. So therefore, you know, where does it open up for him? But if it did open up at Barcelona, maybe that's a different question. But look, Bayern look really, really good. They look like they're going to be untouchable from a Bundesliga perspective. This could be a really, really good year for Bayern Munich, I think, to kind of make a statement in the Champions League. Obviously, last year knocked out by Inter in that quarterfinal, where they gave them a really good run for their money. But ultimately, I don't think last year really mattered from a Vance and Company and his kind of perspective with the board, etc. I don't think he was going to be judged last year on what he did in Europe. This year, I think that might change a little bit. And I wonder if there is just this feeling that Bayern might just have the best run at it, considering that it feels like the title contenders have fallen off in the Bundesliga a little bit, whereas they've kind of ramped up everywhere else. So maybe this is a moment. I mean, look, also you'll love this. Nicholas Jackson's first Bayern goal. Yeah. He also got an assist here. He should have had another. He was bailed out by Elise, who smashed home the rebound. And it was a bit of a Nicholas Jackson, like, obviously just put that away, pal. But he scores a good goal and he's off the mark in Bayern colours, which I think is a good thing for everyone.
Yeah, absolutely. Look, Bayern looks so good in these early stages. And obviously a lot of people like doubt whether Vincent Kompany can really go the full way and take this Bayern side as far as they have the potential to go. But they've been extremely strong so far in terms of the output that they're reaching. I mean, every week they're scoring 4 and 5 at the moment. Like they've got, I've forgotten who they played. Werder Bremen at the weekend, 4-0. Off you go. Hoffenheim, 4-1. Obviously stuck 3 past Chelsea in the Champions League, 5 past Hampton. Like, this team's just ridiculous at the moment. And obviously such a large part of it is down to Kane and his goals. But it's more than that. It's about how this team are just so in tune. So even if Kane is dropping off, you're seeing him ping balls out wide. Some outrageous stuff that they're doing in their build-up play and their connections. It's just so, so special. A couple of really nice games domestically coming up as well, because they've got Eintracht Frankfurt and then they've got Borussia Dortmund coming up by Munich, which is a really tasty game because Dortmund look good themselves at the moment. And I'm excited to see how those two match up.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's going to be really, really interesting. And it's an exciting kind of one from loads of different perspectives. Here's one view. The Paphos goal is an absolute worldie. And it's scored by Mislav Orsic. That's a name I haven't heard for a little while. Yeah, obviously was unbelievable at Dinamo Zagreb. Felt like big moves were on the table for him. And then ultimately ended up joining Southampton in a pretty ill-fated moment for everyone. I think he made one Premier League appearance after joining Saints. Then he went off to Trabzonspor for a bit and we didn't hear from him. And then in January, he joined Paphos after terminating his contract at Trabzonspor. Seems to have rediscovered a little bit of his old self, because this is a wonder strike. One of the best goals you'll see over this Champions League week. It really was something pretty special. So it's nice to see Mislav Orsic back on the pitch, but also back kind of making moments like this happen.
Yeah.
Scoring worldie. So shouts out to Mislav Orsic. A blast from the past there. couple more. Inter won 3-0 against Slavia Prague. There's been two very comprehensive wins for last year's beaten finalists in the competition now. Quietens the noise around all of it. And a couple of good results, solid results for Inter in a row that have just kind of calmed everyone down a little bit. Two for Lautaro here. And the one kind of takeaway I have, perhaps, is that I think Christian Chivu is doing quite a good job of rotating the strike force and keeping them all fresh. Now, we saw Pio Esposito score his first goal for Inter in the game at the weekend in Serie A. And Johan Antboni feels like quite a nice Marcus Thuram rotator piece. So you get different angles of attack across it. It's something that Inzaghi, I think, always did really, really well. Inter kind of, yes, he had Thuram and Lautaro, but also he, you know, was able to keep them fresh and rotate them in the right way. And it feels like Chivu has learned a little bit from his predecessor in that regard. Lautaro comes back in here. He comes back in fresh. He scores two goals and it's pretty routine for Inter in the end, but a 3-0 win for them and two wins from two from Inter. So they'll be pleased with that. And another win for a Serie A club, Atalanta coming from behind to beat Club Brugge 2-1. And you know what? It's just starting to settle down a little bit from an Atalanta perspective. Obviously, there was a lot of noise around the summer, Gasperini going, and was Ivan Juric the man to step in and make things work? And look, I'm not completely convinced by them yet. I'm not going to sit here and tell you that I think that they're going to bag a Champions League spot in Serie A or anything like that. But we've just seen, you know, since that drubbing at the hands of PSG, which can happen to anyone, that's okay. They've had a couple of really good results in a row. They won 3-0 away in Turin against Torino. They stayed in Turin to play Juventus, and they ended up drawing that game 1-1, even with 10 men towards the end of it. And then they come from behind to win this one here against a Club Brugge side that I was so impressed with last week. Ademola Lookman coming back in here, making his first start of the season for Atalanta alongside Kostović, who's the striker they brought in to replace Retegi in the summer. And it's a great goal from Christos Solis to give Club Brugge the lead. But Atalanta were really impressive in the second half. They came out with a real drive, a real verve around them, and they win a penalty to equalize it. And then Pasalic scores the winner with a couple of minutes remaining on it. But it was no less than they deserved. This was a really tricky tie, considering the way that Club Brugge played in their opener. It just feels like Juric, you know, that if six in the table in Serie A now after a couple of good wins and good results in a row, obviously that draw with Juventus, but you know, a couple of good wins before that. I do think that they're just starting to quieten down and look a lot more like a side again. And given all of the drama in the summer, you know, the Lookman situation, the fact that Retegi went off to earn the big bucks, Gasperini leaving as well, it does just feel like Atalanta is starting to find a little bit of calma again. And you're seeing that in the performances recognised.
Very good, mate. Take a deep breath, because you just rattled off a lot of stuff.
I did. There was a lot of thoughts in one go. The machine gun to end the podcast, and end the podcast we will.
Oh, I can do it all again tomorrow.
We will be doing it all again tomorrow. Nine more games in the Champions League we'll be getting across.
Oh, dear. Hopefully, by the time we do tomorrow's one, I'll have a happier outcome than watching the Padres that was going on while we were recording that one, because the Padres lost. So I wasn't very happy halfway through that. And this pod helps me deal with it. So thank you for talking me through it.
No worries whatsoever. Thank you very much, Mr. Dean Jones.
Cheers, mate.
I've been Zach Collins. Thank you all so much for listening to Champions League Takeaway here on Ranks FC. We will see you tomorrow with another episode of the Wednesday's game. But for now, we'll see you very shortly, Rank Squad. Take it easy. Peace.